Good evening. Nice to see everyone. This is my return to our Zoom Zendo for the first time in this new year. I realize some of you were last week already. So I take this occasion to wish everyone a happy year, new year. It seems like it's been a long time since, and yet at the same time, not at all, since I last spoke here. As I was saying before we started, it felt really good to take a long break and be far away from everything that I usually do, not only my Zen activities, but other activities for almost 4 weeks. Well, 4 weeks, let's say. I rarely do that. So this was a really nice moment. And even though it is dark and wintry still, I'm feeling refreshed from my time away. But that's nice at this time of year. I had a funny experience when I was staying with my mother. We gave her for Christmas, among other gifts, a puzzle. You know, a jigsaw puzzle, we call them in English. I don't know what you call them in French or Portuguese. You know, the big puzzles with 1,000 pieces. And it was a picture, a painting that she really likes and that happens to be in the Chicago Museum that we visited. So we got her the puzzle. And spent my husband and I and her, we spent the week together working on this puzzle. 1,000 pieces, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot. And none of us really are used to doing puzzles like this, so it was quite an adventure. Let's see, how can I say this? I think my husband would say I became obsessed with it. I would say that I really plunged into it and took full advantage of the fact that I didn't have anything else to do, because people could see how much I liked it and were thinking, oh, we should give you that as a gift. We should give you puzzles for gift. But I said, you know, when I'm at home, I probably wouldn't do it because I have too many other things to do. And I would feel like, oh, no, I can't sit down for 3 hours and look at this puzzle. I can't do it. And the reason that I bring it up is that there was something really fascinating about that's kind of a glimpse of something that I hadn't seen before. Because there's so many pieces and the colors, you know, there are some parts that you can distinguish, but then there's like sky and all the pieces are blue. Or there's a black jacket and all the pieces are black. Or, you know, big chunks that are the same color, faces, and they're all kind of the same color. So I had to look at these pieces completely differently. And I learned to, it was kind of like an awakening to the shapes of the pieces, because they have what they call masculine and feminine aspects, the puzzle, the pieces. You know, they'll have like a piece, you know, like that has this, which is considered masculine. And then there's a piece that, you know, is like this, that is considered feminine and female, male and female, they call them actually. And sometimes they have like three male parts and one female part, or sometimes only female parts. And Alain, my husband, at one point looked up on the internet to see what an expert said about doing puzzles, see if there were any tricks. And this was after our second day. So, but she actually said that she did what we did. She separated the pieces by color and then by shapes, and then tried to do the borders first, kind of logical stuff. She said, however, she's an expert, and she said she could do 1,000-piece puzzle in 2.5 hours. Well, no way for me. No way. I would spend like 3 hours just looking for one piece sometimes. In any case, what became suddenly at one point this kind of glimpse was how, when I became familiar with the shapes, I became more and more familiar, and I knew how to look at the shapes. It's kind of like, in fact, it reminded me of learning a language. When I learned French, I learned all these words, you know, with their different shapes and forms and things. And I would, when I first moved to France, I couldn't understand what people were saying. So I just left the radio on all the time to France Inter, and which is kind of like this ordinary radio station. And after about almost 2 months, I'd say, suddenly one day, when I was listening to it, I understood a phrase. And then because I understood that phrase, all the phrases fit together, and I could hear how the words went together, and suddenly I could hear it and I could understand. And it was quite a moment, you know. It was like this awakening moment to the language. And with the puzzles pieces, it was the same thing. Seeing how, really observing the pieces and really observing how they fit together and observing how I would, you know, sometimes I would just, when we first started, we would just randomly look at the pieces and try to see if two pieces went together. Well, that, we wouldn't get anywhere doing that. But the more I looked at the pieces, the more I saw how they worked, the more familiar I became with it, then the more fluid it came and the easier it was to put the pieces together to make a whole. So, and it was this process of discovery, of seeing the parts make up the whole and how they fit together. And it occurred to me that it was also a lot like koan practice, where you get this thing which you don't have any idea what they're talking about, this koan. You understand the words, but it makes no sense. And if you try to make sense of it, it's like trying to fit random pieces together, and or like searching for something that isn't going to help you. You're not looking for the right thing in those pieces. You're maybe looking for the size, or you want to put two female pieces together because they look good together or something. They won't work. And then at some point, after you become familiar with it, for me, it was like a koan, these pieces of the puzzle. After I sat with it and sat with it and sat with it and sat with it, suddenly, oh yeah, those pieces go together. Or it happened several times where it was clear we had all the pieces around together, and then there was one piece in the middle of a section that we couldn't find. We saw exactly what the shape was, and we knew exactly the color it was, but we couldn't find the piece. And we like would try all the pieces that looked like that might work. None of them worked. And then suddenly, when not looking for it at all, someone would say, oh, here it is. Boom. And this is exactly what happens with koans, in my experience. And maybe some of you can recognize some of this. It happens to me with writing. It happens to me with cooking. You know, you look at these ingredients and you don't really know how they go together. You're not even sure. You could stand there and look at them, or you can test them. And then the more you cook, the more you figure it out. Like, I read recipes. I don't often follow, well, I do follow some recipes, but I look at recipes and I know how to read the recipe to figure out how things go together. And then I can do it myself. I can say, oh yeah, okay, these things work together. And if you cook this first and then you add that, and these spices go together, and this is how you make a curry or whatever. But it takes this process of familiarization, which brings me to what our practice is about. What we say, Zen practice, Zen meditation, is about becoming familiar with things as they are. Whether we have some, sudden moment of when we see this glimpse, or whether it's just through time, sitting, just being here now with what is, it becomes much more familiar. And we understand it in a different way. And we see how the world really works and how it is to interact with people. And we can understand even better why people behave the way they behave. And why we behave the way that we behave. This was a great teaching for me. This was the jigsaw puzzle teaching, actually. And I happened upon this koan, this story about Joshu, in a book that I was reading about the same time. During my break, I was reading this book. And it's a koan. It's a story, but it's a koan. So a monk once asked Joshu, "What is my teacher?" Joshu said, "Clouds rising out of the mountains, streams entering the valley without a sound." The monk said, "I wasn't asking you about those things. Or I wasn't asking you about them." Joshu said, "Though they are your teacher, you don't recognize them." And that's so much. This is the jigsaw puzzle teaching. So if I have this idea of the piece that I'm looking for, even though it's right there in front of me, I don't recognize it. This is the jigsaw puzzle teaching for our life in general. Even though our life is the way, we don't recognize it. Because when he says, what is my teacher? And he answers, clouds rising out of the mountains, streams entering the valley without a sound. It's just, he could have done what Joshu does. It's the pencil on my desk. It's the car passing outside. It's my tired jet lag. It's the Seu's cat who passed in the behind. It's just this. It's all your teacher. But we don't recognize it. If we recognized it, then we would be taught. Then we would see the teaching in it. And at one point during the puzzle week, so Anna said, "We're never going to finish this. We're never going to get through it. We're never going to finish this part," or whatever. And I said, "I'm not trying to finish it. I'm just trying to find this next piece." And really, it changed my experience of it. Just trying to find the next piece, the next piece, the next piece, the next piece. The truth is, we didn't finish it before we left. If we had had one more day, we would have finished it. But my mother said she wanted to keep it, so she's supposedly working on it. Although it was quite hard for her because, you know, her eyes aren't so good and it's tiring and she couldn't sit there for 3 hours. So we'll see. There wasn't much left. But really the fact of just, I'm not trying to finish it. I'm just looking for this piece. And if we live our life that way, wow. So much more relaxing. If we just see how, what is this moment? In a sense, we see every moment. So Joa sent us this piece, this text for our study group from the Bodhidharma book that we actually started in our study group, like, I don't know when that was. It was when we were at the Red Earth Center. So that was like 12 years ago or something, or more probably. My copy of the book, I got my copy. My copy is from 2005. So we were doing it in Red Earth Center long, long ago. Maybe nobody even remembers it. I don't know if anybody remembers. It wasn't much of a success. Because not the same people came every week and it was too big a piece to bite off for everyone at the time. But in that book, so I since I saw the text Joa sent, I took my book down and I just opened it and I annotated this book and underlined a million things in it, and because we were going to study it. Or actually, I had read it before. And I came upon this phrase, not in the part Joel sent us, but in another part. Seeing through the mundane and witnessing the sublime is less than an eye blink away. Realization is now. Why worry about gray hair? I thought, wow, this is great. I had underlined this passage. Seeing through mundane means, you know, the ordinary. Seeing through the ordinary and witnessing the sublime, seeing the, you know, the absolute beauty of all things is less than an eye blink away. It's just like thing like that. It doesn't mean it is always, we don't always, every time we blink, realize it, but it's that close. That's what he's saying. It's that close. And it's now. Realization is now. So why worry about your hair getting gray? You know? Just this piece, right? Why worry about those difficult pieces over there on the edge that we can't figure out? Or why worry about all those black pieces that all look the same? Just this piece. Just this piece. Right now. And like with the puzzle, we're, you know, blinded by not, we can't see it clearly because we're not looking in the right place or for the right thing. Witnessing the sublime, it's like our true nature is, we often say it's veiled. And the more that we look, the more that we just stay present to what is, then the more that that veil lifts. And we see how things go together, like the pieces. Like me just turning the radio on and just letting it be on all the time, just listening. Actually, one of my French teachers told me to do that. And it was a very good idea. Because then I just became familiar, more familiar with the patterns, like with the pieces of the puzzle. I just became more familiar with those pieces and how they looked and the differences and the different shapes that they formed because they had those different aspects. And the same with words, with language. Same with learning to read. Little kids, they learn how to put those letters together and then the sounds together. And then suddenly there's a word. And then another word. And then they can decipher a whole sentence. Same thing with our practice. Becoming familiar with the way things are. The nature of things, let's say, the true nature. So I really really enjoyed that. And I think probably, maybe we could say I was obsessed with it, but I think part of the reason that I could plunge into it so fully is because it was familiar to me, the process. The practice of putting a puzzle together is very similar to the practice, koan practice, similar to my whole path, similar of how I live my life day to day. And I wondered, I was thinking the other day about how the story is that the Dalai Lama loves mechanics and loves to take machines apart and see how they work and put them back together. And I think there's something similar in that. I suspect that it's similar to my experience of the puzzle, I think. Seeing how it fits together. Seeing how all the pieces, and then what do we do with them? Like the ingredients when cooking, Or even Bernie Glassman's whole practice of returning to what are your ingredients? What are the ingredients of your life? And how can you best put them together, like a puzzle, to make your supreme meal, as he called it, to make your life the supreme meal. Using the pieces of your life, the ingredients in your life, what do you do? How do you do that? And the ingredients are already there. It's like, the mountains and the rivers are your teacher, as Joshua said. It's already there, even though you don't recognize it. So, that was my experience that I wanted to share with you and share it with Joshu's koan, which is a very beautiful, beautiful one that we can all look into. And I'm open to comments or questions.
Can I read some? Mm-hmm. Phrase.
Yeah.
Practice makes perfect. After a long time of practicing, our work will become natural, skillful, swift, and steady. Bruce Lee.
Who said that? Who? What?
Bruce Lee.
Oh, Bruce Lee. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I wrote this for 2 days. And I want to say that today it's a strong day for me, because when my mother were here between us alive, is your hundred birthday. It's the birthday of my mother, 100 years.
Oh, wow.
And all the day, it was so strong with me. It's also that because it's one person, she's a great teacher for me. I say she is because I saw that clearly before she died. And it was a really strong day. I was like very sensible to all the things, and it was really her birthday today. I'm happy that we are all together again this year.
Thank you, Sam. Ready?
It's a beautiful word, the word puzzle. To puzzle. To wonder, to be puzzled. Maybe the stream and the clouds, it's puzzling. We are puzzled. It's to have a fresh view on things, to be puzzled.
Yeah, because it reflects openness if we're puzzled. Yeah, that's true. It's a verb in English. I don't think it is in French or Portuguese, probably. Do you have the word puzzle in Portuguese, or do you have another name for that? For those?
We use the English word a lot, but there's an expression in Portuguese which literally means quebra-cabeças. How do we cabeça? It's the head. Quebra, it's like break, like to break the head, because it's something we need to think hard about.
Castet.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That would be. Yeah.
But how do you call the game? I mean, the actual puzzle with the pieces.
There's not a word.
You could call it a quebra-cabeças, like I said. But you most of the people just use English. I never use the English word when I'm working. I always change it to the Portuguese expression. Yeah, but usually it's just the English word, mostly. Yeah.
I just looked up the etymology of this word, because the more you think about it, where does this word come from? Zizi, mm-hmm. Puzzle. They say 16th century, origin unknown. But it doesn't sound all that English. This is Google, so maybe there's better. It doesn't sound all that English, really. I mean, the spelling is very odd.
Puzzling.
It is indeed.
Yeah. Joe is bringing out the heavy artillery.
Well, I just want to share that it's funny that you talk about this puzzle. Well, Happy New Year to everyone, first of all. And because I was at I had a family Christmas as well, and we were in the States and spending time with my cousins. And on Christmas Day, actually, we took out a puzzle. My cousin has puzzles. And so we started putting all the pieces on the table, and I became obsessed with the puzzle. I think, you know, we're on the same birth date, so we might have similar kind of, anyway, but yeah, and so I totally relate to what you're saying, but I didn't get to the point, the Nirvana puzzle point, because we had to have set the table for Christmas dinner and had to break up the puzzle because we hadn't put it on a board, and we weren't staying long enough to work on it anyway. So, but I had this glimpse into jigsaw puzzle teaching. So yeah, I just, that's funny.
Funny, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think it is too. It's a thing that people do collectively. I hadn't really noticed that since other people have told me they do it, you know, like with their families or something.
Yeah. I've never done it before.
Yeah. I tried with my niece. That was a present for her. But I had the opposite experience because I wasn't with no patience. I quit very immediately. And I was amazed by the patience that my niece had to do that. She was really focused. And being a teenager, it's not that common. Usually she's on the phone watching videos, but with the puzzle, she was really focused. Me, on the other side, I couldn't have the patience. So I guess I have to work on my patience to be familiar with something.
Interesting. Wow. Wow.
And while we're on the subject, you know, there is a puzzle laid out at Donna. I was there Tuesday.
Really?
Yeah, it's a Tanka kind of puzzle. And so it was very interesting while you were talking, while all of us are talking, that process of deciding how you do this. Because I'm not a puzzle person. My sister-in-law is heavy into this. But is there a method? What's my method? And I didn't find anything, actually. I was there for 15, 20 minutes because it was before the text study. But that whole process of starting to look at this as something, I don't know, I was going to say a job, but not quite. Yeah, like a koan, something you have to find the answer to, but it's not obvious how you're going to get there.
Hmm. Where do they have it at Donna laid out?
It's in on the dining room table.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. I was just there today, but I wasn't in the dining room.
You didn't notice? Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So what is the etymology, Joa?
It says it's rather obscure, but it said one of the possibility that it comes from to pause. And they said, I don't even know what it means, because it says it's a French historical dictionary. Dictionnaire historique and it said, I don't even understand what in French it says. Puzzle est le déverbal de tout puzzle. I don't even know what déverbal means. To puzzle, embarrasser, rendre ou laisser faire, laisser perplexe. 1595. Employé intransitivement pour essayer de résoudre. Mot d'origine obscure. So obscure origin. Qui se rattache peut-être au moyen anglais puzzle, I don't even know what that means, forme de participe passé qui pourrait être issue de to pause, 16th century, affares de to oppose.
Hmm.
So it's very unclear. Ce dernier en usage du 14e au 17e siècle au sens de confronter avec des objections, des questions, est issu de l'ancien français apposer. Variante de opposé, format archaïque de opposé. So there is clearly something about the questioning already historically, from what I understand. To oppose.
Interesting. Yeah.
The verbal just means that it comes from a verb.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. So it still exists as a verb too in English. Yeah. Interesting. Well, we do say something when we're puzzled about something, we say, oh, that gives me pause. We can say that in English too. It gave me pause. It was like, just, to wonder about.
But, you mean that means to, that it gives me something to think about? It gives me pause?
Well, it's like, oh, that I wasn't quite sure what that meant, or that was kind of confusing what just happened. It gave me pause. Oh. It's not really that common of an expression, but.
P-O-S-E.
P-A-U-S-E.
Oh, P-A-U-S-E.
Okay. Pause. Yeah. But no. Interesting in any case.
Just going back to the not seeing it. What could you say if I asked you why don't we see it? I was going for we think it's something else or
so what are you talking about exactly? Not seeing what?
Going back, yeah, for the koan, for instance, it didn't the mountain, that's not, what does it say? That's not what I asked, or what, how does it say it? The
when you mean with monk, Joshua?
Not Joshua, but
so the monk says, what is my teacher? And Joshua says, clouds rising out of the mountains, streams entering the valley without a sound. The monk said, I wasn't asking about them. And Joshua said, though they are your teacher, you don't recognize them.
So why don't we recognize it?
Well, I mean, there's many different possible explanations, but the basic notion is because we're looking somewhere else, or we are attached to an idea about what it should be. If I'm insisting on putting this piece of the puzzle in place and it's not working, but if I just keep pushing for that one and it's not fitting, I'm not going to see the other pieces. I'm only focusing on that one piece. And that's a metaphor for how we function in many ways.
Can it also happen that what we see, or how we see what we see, we don't think is worth it? That's not worth to be.
That's just a derivation of looking for something else. We have an idea, and if we're judging something as to be not worth it, then we're not clear. We've got a standard that we've set. This is worthful. This is worthful. No. This is worthy, and this is not. And so anytime we find ourselves in that, oh, this isn't important, oh, this is not worth my time, what are we really trying to say? What do we mean by that? Or if we're fixed on, with the koan, often what happens is we think we get it. And so then we come and we try that and the teacher says no. And we go back and try again, but we're really still hanging on to the other one because we thought we were so sure that was it. And we just keep going back to that. And then we might try that again with the teacher. Or we might say, oh, well, I don't get it. I'm because we're still hanging on to the previous idea we had. And about ourselves too. So an idea about myself, because we have these ideas about ourselves, we don't see who we truly are.
Thank you.
It's like if we took the shadow of, say, whose cat to be her cat, and we become completely, we're sure that that's her cat. And then we see this other cat behind her and we think, oh, there's two cats. She has two cats. She does have two cats, but there's only one there. And same thing. If we if we're hanging on to an idea of what to see, then we don't really see what is there. In this Bodhidharma book, I had written this quote from Victor Hugo that I found in another book about the same time. And this is a translation into English of it. The man who does not meditate lives in blindness. The man who meditates lives in darkness. Our only choice is black. This is not like meaning to be depressed. But, you know, he's saying, when he says the man who meditates lives in darkness, it's to say that if, when you meditate, suddenly, you know, you can see how puzzling the world is. If you're not looking, if you're not meditating, then there's just blindness. Then you don't see. And then in Victor Hugo's explanation, it's you live in darkness. You see, but it's not what we think it is. And then he goes on to say our only choice is black. This was taken from another text, I'm sure. So I don't know what he goes on to say after that. I don't remember. And there's nothing wrong with not meditating and living in blindness, quote. There's nothing wrong with it. However, we don't witness the sublime, as Bodhidharma says in that case. We don't see through the mundane. Ready?
It is very strange about Victor Hugo, because in another place he say, "Oh fools, who think I'm not you."
What? What did he say? Oh fools, what?
All fools who think I am not you. He said that. All fools who think I am not you.
Oh fools who think that I am not you. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
If I draw on your, the image of the puzzle, what it evokes to me is that, you know, if the puzzle is kind of a metaphor or represents reality, it's really complex, it's full of pieces, and it's very, very hard to put together. And yet everything falls into places and it's all connected. And if we continue with that, it's also the first task that is part of our practice, that is embracing reality, embracing life, encountering our experience without any judgments, but just really encountering, so that we can really see precisely that conditioning, that how it actually all fits in into places. But when we are too focused with our own opinions, very difficult to put back the pieces where it belongs, and to see the interconnectedness and the relationships and the and how it comes all together, and it just appears as a very scattered and complicated and unfathomable just reality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we can have an idea about how we think things fit together, or which thing fits with which thing, or even how we think we should fit in the big picture or something. And then we don't see where our place is. We don't truly see where this place of ours, which piece are we? We don't see it because we're thinking we belong somewhere else. We don't see how the whole, how we are the whole, in fact, but how that our piece is essential. Every piece is essential. Yeah.
And can always come someone who needs the dish, and we need to put away the puzzle and do it again.
That's right. Yeah.
And also another element is the fact that there is something pleasant in finishing, in putting something together. It's like I've managed to put something together, even if it's, and also another dimension is that it's very impermanent, except if you glue it, just it's gonna be put apart very, very quickly. And so that's another aspect of our reality, just the impermanence of it.
Yeah. And the idea of gluing it is almost absurd, because that defeats the whole purpose. Right. And in our reality as human beings, we do try to glue things, but
yeah, and then it's not a game anymore.
Yeah, it's not a game.
Not a game. You're losing the playful dynamic of, or the playful dimension of the object.
Right.
So that's another simile that we can.
Yeah.
This reminds me of the Kala Chakra mandala that they did. Tibetan monks came to La Villette. It was around my birthday, so it was in April, but it was a long time ago. And you could sit and watch them. Apparently, there are a certain number of them. They were quite young, 3 or 4, maybe more. And each one they have these conch shells with sand. With sand in them, and they build up this three-dimensional assembly of the Kala Chakra mandala. And what I understood was that each one has his part to do. So this one makes a blue door over here, and then this one comes with the yellow. It's like almost like watching somebody make a cake. And since it must have been during Easter vacation or something, because I went several times, I became fascinated with this thing. You could sit in the gallery and watch them, and they were quite jolly. It wasn't all ritualistic or anything. They were kind of telling each other jokes in Tibetan, not so soon, because they were laughing and stuff. And then at the end of it, when it's all assembled, they take it and throw it in the sand. And that's the end of that puzzle. But it was so interesting to see, watch this thing being built up. And I kept thinking, how did they, I mean, they didn't have a plan. They didn't have a map or anything. They knew how to do this. And it's quite complex. It was fabulous.
Yeah, the Tibetans, they do that. They do that a lot, those sand mandalas. And they don't always pick it up and dump it in the sen, but they like blow it away or always it's gone. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Great teaching in impermanence and not being attached. Used to, when I, that reminds me of like when I was a child, we had these like sand painting things you could do. You put glue down and then you poured different colored sand on the places. So, you know, we were miles away from the Tibetans with their sand paintings.
But it's true, and yet it's very true that we're very quick to cultivate the desire to maintain that, to like to keep a picture of that, as like to really glue it and then put it on the wall or something.
And then we miss it. And then we miss it. Though they are your teacher, you don't recognize them. Okay. So that's the jigsaw puzzle teaching. Thank you. We will say the vows and... And...